Off the Ball Rugby.
I question that theory, and I wonder, come the biggest games, whether it will be the undoing of Leinster, as in the end it was in the final, because Toulouse are taking their game on.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Football on Off the Ball
with William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
Well, you're welcome to another Off the Ball Sunday kickback with myself, Stephen Doyle, and the great Brian Kerr. And, well, I say great Brian Kerr, but certainly not a great football match.
Don't be exaggerating, Stephen.
Certainly wasn't a great game, was it, Old Trafford,
no,
Brian?
No. I mean, it wasn't a good game. Lack of quality in it. Both teams played towards the night. Looked like they were showing the effects of that. I don't know why the managers didn't make more changes in the starting teams, given the effort they put in during the week. Manchester United obviously struggled till late in the game, got three goals and won the match 3-1. Looked a lot better than it was, and Brighton won 2-0 at Ipswich in a hard old battle in that game from what I saw. So I kind of surprised that they didn't make more changes in their lineups, but it was very poor quality in the first half today. But Brighton, I felt, were always a team with a bit more control about them, a bit more sense and purpose about what they were trying to do. And they gave away a bad goal. They gave away the penalty kick through the mistake of Bruggen, who made a couple of errors. Young goalkeeper, not surprising, sticking to their principles, playing out in the back. And Belaba forced into making that. He wasn't forced into, he could have let Zirkzee go on and try and score, but decided to pull him back and got Manchester United back into the game when Fernandes converted the penalty kick. But outside of that, Manchester United were very little threat. Diallo, probably going to be hard for him to reproduce what he did on Thursday night with the marvellous hat-trick against Southampton. But he was kept in check, I'd say, by a combination of Estepinan in the left-back position for Brighton, and orthodox back four, and Mituma, the Japanese player, who walked up and down the pitch quite well. Didn't have a great impact in the game other than the cross for the goal from Minta, but I thought he played overall very steadily, and the honesty of the work rate both himself and Minta showed was very important to Brighton's performance.
You'd have to say in United against Southampton during the week, Southampton looked like the better side and the home team for a lot of that game, even though they ultimately lost. And you could say the same about Brighton. It was almost like they saw Southampton playing on Thursday. They said, right, if we go play our best football, play, you know, don't kind of hold back in any kind of a way, that we can go and try and assert ourselves on this game. And they started off pretty intense. I know they fell off a bit, but as you mentioned in commentary, in the second half they came back out with that intensity. And they looked like the team that just had that desire to win today.
And it just had more about them. I think the centre-back pairing, Van Hecke and Dunk, now back in the team. He came on for Webster in the match on Thursday night. But they looked solid. But the two centre midfield players gave them the grip on the game, Brighton. That's what I saw. Two young players, Belaba and Ayari. And one's 20, the other one's 21. Manchester United have Ugarte and Maino in there, who's the young player. But didn't have control. The two Brighton players seem to have control of the game, very assertive, knew what they were trying to do. They didn't go off pressing madly today, Brighton, but neither Manchester United play like the home team that were trying to put Brighton under pressure and were trying to box them into their own half and make them make continuous errors in possession playing out in the back. The one with Verbruggen was kind of one of two errors I think they made in the build-up play, but in general they were allowed to build it up as they liked, and Manchester United dropped off into a kind of a mid block, as I think it's called these days, where it basically means that the front players don't press until the ball comes into the middle of the pitch. And that's it with Brighton. They were never under pressure. There was never the crowd didn't really get involved in the game, and I would have said it was a tame and timid performance by Manchester United, and Brighton were the better team, deserved to win the match. But that key area was the midfield area where they were on top in there and didn't allow Manchester United going into. Even when they changed it to a half time and took off the two they started with, brought in Collier into the middle, brought Fernandes back in the middle of the field, and it didn't change the run of the game in any way.
Looking at Brighton, when you think about the fact that he did make a couple of changes to his squad, he's got a decent enough squad there.
I think looking at the number of players who are missing today,
yeah,
Stephen, as well, a lot of players out injured.
So how far can he take them this season? Because they did have that, they've got the back-to-back wins now. That win against Ipswich was their first since the end of November. They went on a mad run of draws then, but if he can kind of build on these two wins now against Ipswich, against Manchester United, how far up the table can he go? Should they be looking to qualify for Europe next season?
I think that's realistic, that they could qualify maybe in, you know, 6th, 7th place, I think is it possible for them to maintain where they're going. I mean, the fact that they've only lost 4 games this season now, what would that be, 21 or 22? 22 now, today, after today. That's consistent for them. I know it was a lot of draws in that. Was it 10 draws? It's a lot of draws. But at the same time, they're obviously a team that's well organised. They try to play in the front four. It's not like they've got draws trying to play, you know, hold on and draw 0-0 or draw 1-1. They're generally a team that tries to take the game to the opposition. So I think there's a lot of potential in, but there's a lot of other teams in a similar position to them. The likes of Fulham and Bournemouth, I think particularly, have been in very good form. Newcastle in great form until yesterday. You would expect Manchester City are going to finish ahead of them as well. Arsenal are obviously ahead. Notts Forest are up there ahead. So it's probably more realistic for them to think, can they finish somewhere between 8th and 10th? I think that'd be another good season for them if they could achieve that.
Evan Ferguson, will he be there till the end of the season? That's the big question, because during the week it seemed that Hertzler, without saying it directly, almost hinted at the fact that he is open to maybe loan offers for Evan Ferguson. Now, granted, he has an ankle knock at the moment. Once he gets back fit again, he could be out the door. Is it possible he could go to a bigger club?
Well, there's a lot of question marks there, isn't there? Because one, the club has to decide and agree, is that the best thing for the player? The player obviously has his own people advising him who are trying to tell him what they think is the best thing for him. The best thing for him is that he plays somewhere. Now, it doesn't look, if he's fit, that he's going to be first choice. At the moment, I'd say he's behind Pedro, Welbeck in that order for the number 9 position. Today, both of them play. They don't usually play both of them together. But, you know, the manager has a bit of thinking to do. Whether he's made up his mind, I don't know.
Sorry to interrupt, Roy, but when you talk about Welbeck and Pedro, we've seen those two players dropping deep and linking play and that kind of thing. Is that something maybe Ferguson missing that?
Oh, I think he can do that. I think that's been part of his game when he was playing well, when he was in the team. We've seen him doing that. He's good physique, good at screening the ball. He can win the ball in the air. I think he has he's nice control with his feet and good awareness. I think he can do that. He can play in a 4-2-3-1 as not as a number 9, say the number 10 position or off the front or whatever you want to call it. But I think the other factor is who will want to sign a player unless he's fit to play. And that's what they'd be looking at and saying, well, he hasn't played a lot of matches. What if we sign him and he can't play? So let's talk about West Ham signing him, because they haven't got a fit centre forward at the moment. You could see obviously yesterday they want assurances that the problem is over and that he can go out and play. So I think they probably need him to play in some sort of a game before they'd sign him. So it's a bit of an awkward one for him, for Brighton, and for any potential suitor in the short term.
Let's move on to United, and I referred you to that comment that Amram made talking about United season is going to be a roller coaster season. I kind of get the sense you're maybe not buying that you feel it's a bit of a cop out maybe, or?
Well, it's probably honest by him in terms of he's seeing what he has, he's seeing the inconsistency of performances. We saw the match, we did the match with Manchester City when they pulled out, you know, a late winner, Diallo, brilliant goal to win the match. We're mostly on the back foot in the match, but they managed to win it. And then you're saying, well, is that is that something that they can build on? Then they lost kind of three games fairly tamely. It was a Bournemouth, Wolves, Newcastle. They lose three, and then they scrap out a couple of results in the cup, playing on the back four.
It's against the big teams, isn't it, Bryce?
That's the pattern. That's what I'm saying. They're like an underdog type team when we're playing clubs that are at a similar level to us with big name and are playing well. We'll scrap it out with them. Manchester City, Liverpool, and Arsenal. They've got results against recently, but the forms in the other games just haven't been good enough. So have they now become, are we just the underdog team? We're the team when we're playing the big clubs. We give them a good goal, we give Liverpool a good match, we can beat Arsenal in the cup, we beat Manchester City. Like, they've got to do it against the Brentfords, the Bournemouth, Brentford, Brighton today, and they're not doing it. So, you know, they're not in good shape. But the manager, I mean, you can't be overcritical of the manager, but he's not getting the best out of what they have. And the one with Rashford, I don't know whether there's someone in the background saying, look, don't pick him, because it looks like we've got someone to take him now. Milan might take him, we'll do a deal on the wages. But surely Rashford's better than some of the players playing. Bring on Anthony today. I think I'd have done better than Anthony coming on today. He made no contribution at all. I mean, it was
same against Southampton when he came off the bench.
Yeah,
well,
no, it makes no impact. His confidence is gone, he's drained. He knows that they don't fancy him now. He knows that the manager doesn't fancy him, he's not picking him. Hoyland's confidence is drained as well. Xerxes delighted to get back into the team, get a go. Fernandes runs around a little bit, but playing up in that position, not mobile enough, I think, to play up there in that kind of one of the two tens. And then in the midfield, is he good enough to play defensively as one or two in the middle? That was pointed out when the manager came to start, where was Bruno Fernandes going to play? But so many of them are in that position. May now, is he going to be a regular? Ugarte doesn't look great for him. He takes him off today at half time. Takes Maynou off again today early in the second half, having taken him off the other night against Southampton at half time. So they look very unsettled everywhere.
Maynou's an interesting one, because he got picked for England for the European Championship squad, and I definitely think he's one of the young players United need to try and keep, but he's not performing well. So is that down to the manager? Is it down to the player himself? Maybe the summer expedition meant that he missed out, because I know Ollie Watkins spoke about it last night. He found it hard coming back from the European Championship, that he found it hard to get back to full fitness, and he's only starting to show his best stuff now. So maybe that's the same case for Maynou.
Yeah, well, there's an awful lot being expected of a young player who was only about his third season in the first team squad. He's still only 19. I think, and they're expecting to be one of the main mans for one of the biggest clubs in the world in the middle of the pitch. I mean, even Real Madrid, you know, they don't do that with the likes of even Tchouaméni when he came in first, and he was in and out, and several other of the young players, Rodrigo, Vinicius Jr. They'd be in and out maybe for a season two before they become. But Manchester United, because of the rest of them haven't been good enough to keep him out of the team, that he's looked a good player, but now he's suffering a bit with the rest of them. I'd say they're all struggling for confidence, that hit and miss. They're waiting, you get one good result, and they're kind of hoping, we mount our aunt and them, but then they lose the next league match and you're back to square one. So he's probably suffering in all of that, where he's playing a slightly different role this year with Ugarte. It looks like he's expected to be more advanced, almost the way Eriksen played for them at times when Eriksen was good enough to play. So he's just suffering and all that, I think, but he's a very good player. But at the moment, they just look incompetent, and say at the moment the whole team. And Lallana makes such an error today, it was so poor. Mesrui, who has been considered one of their better players, hasn't played well at all today. Martinez left out, and I felt rightfully so, but young Yarrow has come in and he's had an awful game the other night. He didn't do much better today either,
but again he switched from the right to the left to accommodate De Ligt staying on the right, so Maguire is in the middle. So
yeah,
there's just no kind of consistency.
Yeah, well, the manager then wanting to fit the players into his piece.
Yeah,
and you would think, will they not try and play a system that suits what we have, and then I'll work on the other system that when I get the players I want to play in it, that I can rely on when the time comes.
We might have touched on a key point here, because Lenny Yarrow gets absolutely skinned by Sulemana for almost 75 minutes,
because he had Diallo playing outside him as the wing back in the first
half,
and
then the lad's confidence is probably taken an extreme hit after that game, and then he puts him from his right centre back position over to the left.
On the left, yeah.
It just doesn't seem like good management.
Well, I've kind of said this any time we've covered Manchester United, that it's like the manager is in experimental mode. He's having a look at everyone to make his mind up on what he's going to do with them and who can play where, and I'll know by the end of the season, and then we'll keep some, we'll let some go, and we'll make our mind up on the others depending on whether we get offers for them or not. That seems to be continuing on, but it's a long season to be going on with that way, and we're still only in January, just over the halfway point in the season, still going in the cup, still going in Europe, and the experimentation is still going on, and it doesn't look like they're getting any nearer to being settled. For like, if you were picking the team for the next match at Rangers and Tours tonight, who would you say will definitely play based on today's performance? Goalkeeper? No. The other goalkeeper did very well against Arsenal. Harry Maguire? Maybe. Yarrow? Not sure. De Ligt? Not sure. Dalot? Not sure. Right back? Not sure. Right wing back? Centre midfield? Not on today's performance, or the performance against Southampton the other night, or maybe the game before that. Which centre forward would you play? Zirkzee or Hoyland? There's no one you'd say, yeah, Diallo starts. Yeah. Stephanie starts. Yeah. Bruno Fernandes, because of the rest of them being inept.
Yeah, well, Bruno Fernandes is the other one, Brian, because, you know, he almost characterises what we see from United playing big performances against the big teams. Yeah. And again, he goes out against Southampton, doesn't play well. Goes out today against Brighton, doesn't play well. In fact, there was a couple of really atrocious passes and kind of, I don't even know if they were goal efforts because they were so bad.
Yeah,
that's not on from the captain.
No, really. But he's playing that position, this position, another position, another day. Different players playing beside him, around him. There's no flow. It looks like in the match, there's no flow about the picking the team or where he's playing or what the combination play should be. So, you know, I wouldn't be over harsh on him now. I've been harsh on him in the past as a captain. I just don't see that as that he doesn't have that ability. Him, I think, as being the captain, I don't see it too great. I mean, he's probably better than he looks on the pitch. He's probably better in the background than he looks. But look, at the moment, they're a bit all over the place, and they've a bit to do now for the Rangers match, because if they get done in the Rangers match, they could well end up outside that top eight automatic qualification.
Bad Rangers as well,
and Rangers going through a fairly tough time at the moment too, so you know it's an important one for Thursday for them to get a result from that game.
Just before we finish, two things I wanted to ask you about. Obviously Everton Spurs was one of the early games at Goodison Park. I watched a bit of Everton against Villa, David Moyes' first game in charge. They weren't great. They looked okay, a little bit maybe more solid at the back, and lost by a goal to nil. So it wasn't a bad defeat against a very good side in Aston Villa. Today they take a 3-0 lead by half time. They conceded two late on against Tottenham, Kulusevski and Richarlison. So maybe that new manager bounce for David Moyes coming in the first two very tough fixtures, but maybe leaving more question marks over Tottenham head coach Ange Postecoglou.
Yeah, I don't know about them being two tough fixtures. One tough fixture, I'd say, with Villa. The other one, not so. I mean, Spurs have been on such a astoundingly bad run since the Manchester City game. They've had defeat after defeat, apart from the win against Manchester United in the League Cup match, the win against Manchester City in the league. Other than that, they've been atrocious defensively, awful, conceding goals, not even as big a threat in attack as they had been. Now they've had injuries, and the manager has referred to it. It's been a terrible season for Spurs, and the fact they're still going in the cup is kind of, and the European competition as well, but I think that's might keep the season alive for them to a certain degree, but their league form is dreadful. And you know what to say, they're down to what,
15th, just above Everton, who are now Everton are actually 4 points behind Tottenham with a game in hand.
So they're a bit off, they're a bit ahead of the bottom three, alright, but you know the form has just been so poor. And I would say that the manager has to be under pressure. He has to be under a bit of mental pressure himself now. He can't be happy with putting out a team and performing that way, performing the way they've been playing. But look, I said from early in the season when people asked me what they think they do, I said I think they'll struggle a bit. I don't see them getting consistent results. As long as the fullbacks keep pushing up into midfield or pushing further up or getting into the inside left and inside right channel, opposition are going to exploit that and be too cute and get goals and counter. And that was even when they would have had Romero and Van der Linde playing, neither of them being available. The two centre midfield players get lost as well, Sarr and Bazuma too often. Expecting Archie Gray to play centre half and to keep out the opposition be playing is, to me, it's just ridiculous. He looks like a boy playing the Premier League who has been pulled out of under 16 football and has to play centre half, and you'd be grand. Look neat on the ball, building her up off the goalkeeper. And to be left with where the goalkeeper, depending on Foster, as a second choice. The lad has come in from the Czech Republic now and he's been getting battered. He's done all right, but they're just no depth, not the depth of the squad required, but also tactically, I think it's naive and kind of impractical. I'd say, given the players they have. I mean, the matches are great, they're always entertainment. Another 5 goals today, but they're coming out on the wrong end of those 5 goal matches consistently, and I don't think it can go on. I mean, I like Postecoglou, I love his attitude and I admire his style, I admire his stubbornness, but from the point of view of the people who are own Spurs and are controlling the big decisions, it can't be very comfortable for him at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, just to finish, Brian, obviously during the week there was, well, I'll maybe start with the fact that last year we had a senior men's manager unveiled in Hamer Hall Grimson. His press conference to be unveiled was totally overshadowed by questions regarding a documentary with which the FAI had to answer for, and Hamer Hall Grimson was left kind of sitting there with questions going over his head and he didn't know what was going on. And we've got a senior women's manager unveiled this week, and again another situation where the FAI are having to answer very difficult questions and the new head coach is left sitting there looking quite meek and wondering what the hell is going on. So I suppose this week's situation was Colin Healy issued a statement 2 hours before the unveiling, and I can totally understand his timing. He was more than likely hoping the FAI would have to answer these questions, but he, I suppose, to make the long story short, you know, made it clear in his lengthy statement that he felt he was given a verbal agreement by the director of football at the FAI, Mark Canham, that he would have his contract extended beyond the end of the last term, which obviously Ireland failed to qualify for the Euros in a playoff defeat to Wales. He claimed that, you know, that this verbal agreement was made, and at the same time he turned down a job at Cove Ramblers, who obviously have new investors in there, and he's looking to provide for his family. He's left alone with 2 kids after the very sad passing of his wife last year, so leaving him in a very difficult situation. And the FAI answering questions during the week, they disputed Colin Healy's version of events and basically said that there was no verbal agreement. They said that there was going to be a review and they'd make their decision at the end of that. So I think a lot of people involved in Irish football feeling, I know Stephen Henderson put a post, social media post, saying that Colin Healy is a really, really good man. He doesn't like getting involved in any kind of, he's not a publicity kind of seeker, attention seeker. He likes to keep out of the media, and this wouldn't be the kind of thing that he likes to get involved with. So I suppose that kind of highlights the fact that it must have been pretty bad for Colin Healy to go public with this. So there's a lot there, Brian, but I'm just kind of, I know you know Colin Healy well. You would have capped him as a Republic of Ireland senior manager. You know the man, you know the character. You've been in with the FAI, so you must have a few thoughts on what happened this week yourself.
There's a lot in that, but look, the bottom line here is that the Colin is a smashing lad. He's a smashing bloke. Anyone who's ever dealt with him, I know him since he was 16. He played underage internationals for us, and he came right through playing the senior team. And I've talked to Colin on a regular enough basis through his career in management and after he finished up in Cork City and before he got involved with the women's team. I wasn't sure that was the right road for him to go anyway, but I think the FAI basically made a pig's ear of this. David Carell said it was a football decision. not to keep Colin on, but I don't know what that means. Does that mean that he wasn't good enough, or that there was someone else going to come in and take his job? I don't know. What it's a football decision on its own means. He needs to expand on that, because it certainly wasn't a decision made by Eileen Gleeson. She was going, and they decided, the FAI decided, Mark Hannum or somebody decided that Colin was out. I was aware of the situation that Colin was very unhappy. Graham Barrett's his agent. Graham was in touch with me before Christmas about it, and I was aware of some of the back and forth with the FAI from their point of view, from Colin's point of view. I was very disappointed, quite upset for him, given the year he's had, given the terrible personal loss that he had during the year. It shows a decision that was made without empathy, without real consideration, and without a bit of due respect to someone who has served Irish football very, very well, both as a player, through his career as a player, in his management career, in his behaviour, and in his work for the FAI. So he's been badly done by, and I think they owe a sincere apology to him. They also should try and find a role for him. Not, I think it may be gone too far for that to happen now. But they made the right pig's ear of it, and I'll stick with saying that. Colin is a good guy, a really good guy. He didn't deserve to be treated in the way he was treated, and he shouldn't have happened to be coming out with the statement he did during the week.
Just to finish on a bright note, because look, the FAI will, I think, have to answer more questions on this. I don't think this is done just yet, but you mentioned about Colin Healy being a great guy. He's proven himself to be an excellent coach. At Cork City, he brought through a lot of young players through that academy who've gone on to great things, and you'd imagine he still has so much to offer Irish football, and you would like to think maybe within the League of Ireland even we might see him on the touchline once again, even if it's First Division, Premier Division, I don't know.
Well, I don't know. Well, the opportunities in football in Ireland are scarce enough. There's no industry here in football. The majority of people that I know that have a pro licence, for instance, which is the highest level of coaching qualification you can get in the country, don't have regular work in football, which is an indication of where the game is at here. You know, it's not, there isn't a proper industry that people get employed in. So a lot of people that are highly qualified, massively experienced, are not working in the game and not contributing in the game. And you've got a lot of very inexperienced coaches working with players who need better coaching, better standards, but there's just not a payment structure in place that people who should be doing the job are doing the job. So Colin, like so many others, is in that, whatever, that scramble for work. But he is he's a very, very good coach. He's shown his work at Cork that he's a very good manager, and his experience should be used by football in Ireland. But that doesn't mean it will be. He had the opportunity, according to what he said himself, of going to Cove Ramblers. I understood he had the chance of going to Kerry, but he decided to throw in his lot with the women's team and stick with it and show some loyalty to that job and to Eileen Gleeson and to the FAI. Sadly for him, that loyalty hasn't been reciprocated by the FAI. So now he's in a situation out of work. His options aren't huge, but if someone has a bit of a clever head on them down in the Munster region, I would hope that someone is going to be able to offer Colin a job that respects his ability and his experience.
100%, Brian. Sadly though, as well, because the programme for government that was released during the week, we might be waiting for a while for the government to get involved, because I think the line was they're going to explore new mechanisms when it comes to academies and structures in League of Ireland football. So we might be waiting a while yet. Brian Kerr, thanks a million.
Alright, might talk about that another day.
Football on Off the Ball
with William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.